This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, investors, and welcome to our Monday, August 20th, 2018 edition of Invest Talk. And there are only two more weeks remaining in the month of August, so summer is fast coming to a close, sadly, and Labor Day will be here pretty quick. Now, I'm Justin Klein, and I thank you for joining us today on Invest Talk. And how has your summer been going? I hope you all got a chance to maybe take a vacation or two, visit some friends, family, hit the beach or the pool. I know I've definitely been had my fair share over this this summer. So, you know, it's always important to get a little R&R, not get too overly focused on your day-to-day. And live. But in able to do that, you have to take care of business. And business is not just your day-to-day personal life, from the people that you deal with in your job and your family, etc., but also making sure that you make strong, sound financial decisions on a regular basis. And I know that if you are a regular listener to Invest Talk, you very likely use some of your time this summer to improve your knowledge of investing in order to produce those better outcomes, better financial gains in your portfolio, better financial decisions on a day-to-day basis. So today we will be talking about how to do that, and of course we will be inviting your participation on our anytime listener line at 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. Now, in many ways, marriage is like a business arrangement. And when it comes down to it, it kind of is. It's a contract in the simplest form. And the business of a successful marriage also requires a degree of romantic stability. So suggesting to your spouse that your marriage should have a cost-benefit analysis evaluation, well, can be pretty tough, problematic, even though it really is a good idea, and I'll explain why coming up. But first, your financial and investment questions will drive today's agenda. Here's a question that came in earlier on our 24-hour anytime line at 888-99-CHART.
Yeah, hey guys. Nick out of Los Angeles. Thanks again for all you guys do. Quick question, what kind of information do you use as far as instant news? You know, like Pepsi, for example, with buying SodaStream or anything big in the market as far as quick, immediate text message or alerts, you know, to your phone or your computer. Thanks a lot, and I'll be listening on the podcast. Thank you so much.
It's a good question. I don't really rely on that because we're not ones to jump on a news story and make a trade just on some headline, right? It's about due diligence and a more drawn out investment process and a process that takes time and isn't driven by one factor. So I wouldn't say I overly rely on one thing. Now, if I do want instant news and I want to know what's happening now on a particular name, frankly, it's Twitter. Twitter beats, kills, destroys the speed of any traditional media outlet. You may not get it fed up to you in your timeline, but if you're looking for it, you know, put in $, whatever ticker symbol of that company is, and click on latest, and you're going to get the latest news. And a lot of it's junk, but if there's some pertinent news, you'll definitely find it the quickest on Twitter. So I like that. You can also do Google Alerts on particular names that send that. I believe they do text messages. I've never signed up for it, but I know they do emails for sure of headlines that hit their news wire. So hope that helps. Hope give you a little sense of where you can get the news that you want quickly. But I also would urge you not to get too freaked out and make trades just simply on a news headline, because typically the market reacts quickly and you've missed it before you can really make a decision on it. Now, if you are planning a wedding, now guys worry about certain things and ladies concern themselves with oftentimes different considerations, but there's no doubt financial impact questions should be discussed before anyone ties the knot. Not just the day of, but ongoing, from budgeting to saving to long-term financial goals. And the main reason is because, although commendably fueled by romantic notions, marriage is a business relationship. It is a contract. So two people get a license to make an agreement and pool their resources together towards a common goal. That's what marriage is. There's a verbal contract that states that both parties are committed to make it work and put in a large initial investment with hopes for great returns over time. Although there are other elements involved, a marriage can benefit from common economic principles that are usually reserved for traditional businesses. And we found a great story on Investopedia.com about this, and here's some of the things you should do to construct or maintain a strong business relationship. One is cost-benefit analysis. Consider whether the marginal cost of doing something is worth more or less than the benefit that would be received from it. Like getting a new car, for example. What if one spouse commutes 5 miles a day, right? And doesn't really use, they don't use the car very often. Does it make sense to, and maybe that car's paid off or the payment on it's extremely low. Does it make sense to trade up for a luxury car that really you're not going to use very often? And that's an overly simplistic thing, but the same could be applied to a real estate. It may be nice to have a big home. Might feel better that you have 3,000 square feet or 3 acres. But are you going to use all of that space? What's the cost that's going to take to, and time to maintain all of that space? So when you're making decisions together, that's similar, right? It's a similar cost-benefit analysis that you have to figure out. And then competitive advantage. A successful marriage isn't always 50-50. And that's why many people divvy up the marital duties based on who can do them best, right? Who makes the most money? Who takes care of the kids better? Who takes care of the house better? Who plans trips better? Who manages the money better? And there's nothing wrong with that. And it's never always going to be fair. But making that decision of who does what better can be very important to longer-term success. Same with the company. Number three, moral hazard. The assumption that your marriage is just too big to fail can lead to taking one for granted, right? The spouse taking the other for granted. So you have to stay invested in your relationship. And there's only you two are going to bail each other out. There's no one else going to come and bail a relationship out that is in a bad state. So just like anything, just like a portfolio, you don't just buy and forget about it completely. You have to maintain it and pay attention. And just like a business, right? Number four, loss aversion. Some people in the stock market, they hold on to bad stocks because they just can't admit that they've been defeated. They lost money. They made bad decisions. Same with maybe what you're wrong when it comes to an issue with your spouse. And many people can't take that ego hit to say, you know what, I was wrong. And that happens in business as well. Many people think that, oh, this next great thing is going to save our company or grow our company dramatically. Same with a marriage, right? This great investment or this decision that we're going to make is going to get us out of financial problems or put us into the mansion of our dreams. And at some point in a business or in a relationship, you have to admit that you're wrong. So think about that as well. And then lastly, avoid quick emotional decisions. This goes back to that caller I just had. Headline news that gets you into some sort of a bullish or bearish state, a particular stock, that can happen with a decision that you're making with your spouse. Something bad happens or something good happens, and you use that positive feeling or negative feeling to rush into a particular decision without understanding the full ramifications of pros and cons. And that's the same with a business, same with your investment portfolio, same with a relationship as well. So the economic approach to marriage might not be the most romantic option, but it does provide a realistic framework for managing relationships, business, portfolios. And if this tried and true, these tried and true theories can really make or break multi-million dollar corporations, probably is going to do well for yourself as well. And I hope you know that while Steve Peasley and I don't specialize in providing marital advice, although Steve used to work for the church helping new couples and managing them through that initial phase. So he has some definite experience in this space. But we do offer unbiased financial advice. And you can call our Dana Point office or send us a message through investtalk.com. All right, now the lines are open. I'm ready to take your questions. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. I want to hear from you. What is on your mind? What can we do to help you, help promote your understanding of various investment terms, practices, explain processes, etc. So get your question in now. All types of questions, I want to hear from you at 888-99-CHART.
It's a Monday Invest Talk. August is half over. School is restarted for some, but there's still time for you to sharpen your investing skill set. Stay with Invest Talk. And now, Justin's here, and he's taking your finance and investing questions live. 888-99-CHART.
Now, today's main talking point is about Amazon, and there's some they had earnings. Was it last week? And they are there's some financial metrics, earnings metrics that I think will be helpful to break down, and not just for people that own Amazon or looking to own Amazon, but just to understand how to look at a quarterly report. At least in broad strokes, okay? And we're going to talk a little bit about that. I also want to touch on interest rates. Jeffrey Gundlach, who's one of the best bond managers out there, he is placing his bets on interest rates going lower, and I'm going to talk about why, and I actually agree with him. Then we're going to talk about a proposal out of the White House, or at least something that President Trump has asked financial regulators to consider, and that is going from quarterly investment earnings, or sorry, not investment, but quarterly earnings reports to semi-annually. So only doing it twice a year versus quarterly. And I'm going to talk about what I think of that and whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. And then lastly, we're going to talk about student loans if we have time and how that's affecting the overall economy. But I want to talk about the market quickly. We had the, we had the Dow up a whopping 89 points, the S&P up 7 today, and the Nasdaq with a slight positive gain of about 4.5 points. Russell was up 7, a decent day there. NYSE was up about 56 points, about 0.45%. So a modest up day in the markets. Still, we're going to the third week of the Tesla drama. That's continuing to be interesting. So I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is how you get through. That's 888-99-CHART.
It's If there is ever a moment when you question how well your portfolio is doing or maybe should be doing, make time to look into the various investment strategy programs available to clients of KPP Financial. Just head over to investtalk.com, roll over the InvestTalk Programs menu link, and read all about them. And now, we're taking your financial and investment questions live. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Noel in Napa. You want to talk about dividends?
Yes, Justin. Good afternoon to you. Just a simple general question. I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago, I got some stock free as a dividend, a special dividend. They issued stock based on how many shares of the company stock I already owned. Anyhow, I want to determine, at some point I'm going to sell this stock, and I need to know the cost basis for the IRS. And so initially I was thinking it would be zero because it was just given to me for nothing. But then again, maybe, hopefully, a better scenario would be if the cost basis of this stock given as a dividend was the value of that stock on the day of issue that it was given to me. That would be a better scenario. I'd have to pay less tax that way. I'd have a higher cost basis, in other words. So what's your take on that?
Yes, that is my interpretation of how it worked. Now, I'm not a CPA, so that's more of a question for a tax professional. But if it is spun off as a dividend from what my understanding always has been, is yes, whatever the value was when it is paid out as a dividend, or I consider it more of a spin-off, then that would be your cost basis. So I would imagine that's
that
what it is, but I would definitely corroborate that with the CPA.
That way. Well, thank you very much, Justin.
Exactly.
Appreciate your thoughts on that.
Thanks, Noel. Let's talk a little bit about Amazon. And this is a market behemoth. I don't know if it's now the second or third largest company in the world. And they're one of the fastest growing in the world. Let's say that. Their revenue last quarter grew 39%. Earnings are starting to pick up dramatically. And mainly that's because of their web services. But what I want to do is break down the fact that there are different segments of this business and really any business. And you really need to understand where that is coming from. And it's common that the different businesses that a company has contributes in different proportions, not only from the revenue side, but also the earnings side and the growth side of the business as well. Some may be growing than others. A lot of times the smaller portion of the business is growing faster than the larger portion of the business, and Amazon is a great example of that. Now, Amazon's online store revenue grew 12% year over year. And you're going to say, well, that's good. 12%. It's a nice double-digit growth rate. Well, in fact, this is probably the weakest part of this report, of their report, is because this is a decelerating part of their business. It's still growing, but it's decelerating. A year ago, revenue was up 22% year over year. Okay. In the fourth quarter of 2017, it grew 17% year over year. In the first quarter, it was 13%, and now it's at 12% year over year. So you're seeing a deceleration in their online store revenue. Now, the positive, even that's not a positive, it's definitely a negative that growth is decelerating. The good part of that is, I don't know if you know this, but they don't make a ton of money from their online store business. Their margins are super, super thin. Not to say they don't make a lot of money. Just in proportion to their revenue, their margins are so thin that they don't nearly make as much money on that side as you would probably imagine. Now, the second, that's 49% of their business is the online store revenue, or their revenue, total revenue. Amazon Web Services, which is about 12% of their total revenue, that is where growth is really picking up. 49% year over year. Really solid growth there, and that is actually very profitable. They have high margins on that side of the business. Their subscription revenue is also doing very, very well, up 55% year over year, which is a bit consistent of what we've seen from that side of the business over the last few quarters. And that only represents about 6% of their overall revenue. Then there's third-party resellers. That's been consistently growing, 36% growth on that side. Physical stores, this is where you're seeing most of their growth. It's not really organic because they purchased it. They purchased Whole Foods. And that, so sales are roughly flat quarter over quarter. They didn't have it a year ago. But quarter over quarter, it was up about $50 million. Not really a big move. So what this is showing you is where their business and profits are really ramping up from, and that is from subscription services and Amazon Web Services. The biggest problem with that is that that is also the most competitive area of their business, from the likes of Netflix and Apple and Spotify, certainly on the subscription side there. And then you have Amazon Web Services, and a lot of other companies are trying to get into what they do, and margins are certainly going to be squeezed over time. So I hope this gave you a sense of how to break down an earnings report. I think Amazon is a great company. I certainly wouldn't buy it at these prices, but it gives you a sense of how to look at breaking down different businesses of a particular company's earnings report. Now, tomorrow on Invest Talk, 4 things to know about backdoor Roth IRA conversions. I want to hear from you. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. First, good reason number 5 for a portfolio checkup with Steve. Steve says that many portfolios he looks at are weighted in just one or two sectors. A diverse mix of market sectors is so important to the health of a retirement portfolio. Steve can help you reorganize your retirement portfolio. He can make suggestions about the sectors of the future. And if you'd like, a KPP financial program that fits your goals and your life situation. There's never a cost for InvestTalk listeners and no sales pitch or obligation of any kind ever. To schedule your one-on-one conversation with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review, or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. And now let's continue with the podcast.
Have you subscribed to the Invest Talk podcast at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play? If not, please do so. Then listen, rate, and review. This helps us improve our Invest Talk programming. And now, Justin's here, and he's taking your calls. 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin. My name is Wesley from Stockton, California. I am calling because I am curious about IDEX Laboratories, IDXX. It is a pet food play that also has space in veterinary equipment and water treatment for the farming industry. I know it's a growth stock and not a value stock, but today I had a dip and I've been waiting for a dip to buy in, and I was hoping that you can see some positive fundamentals on this company. If you could take the time today and speak about it, that'd be great. Thank you.
All right, let's see, IDXX, I'm having a little trouble with my internet at the moment, so I might have to audible into another, my internet is not cooperating right now, so I'm going to have to go to a talking point and come back to this stock in just a little bit. Hopefully my internet can start cooperating with me. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about interest rates. And this is an article or a report from Jeffrey Gundlach. And he is, I think, one of the best bond managers out there. He understands kind of the ways and how the markets work and what the bond market is telling us. And a bond market, frankly, tells us a lot more than the equity markets. And right now, He's talking about a big bet on treasury rates. Treasury rates are headed lower, most likely. But there's a big bet that they're headed higher, and we're actually at record short position on treasuries that going back to, you know, since they've reported it, basically. And this is the Commitment of Traders report. And if you're ever looking at this report, you want to focus on which way the institutions are placing their bets, or the commercial money, as it would be said in their report. Because they're the ones that are needing to buy or sell a particular asset. Whereas speculators, money managers, etc., they're typically on the wrong side of the trade. Okay? So just remember that. And right now we're at record short positions for those traders, those speculators. And what that typically means is they're going to be wrong, and interest rates are going to go down as opposed to up. And history says 75% of the incidents when hedge funds rushed into wagers that yields would travel one way, rates would end up moving the opposite direction in the following month. And I agree with that. And there's multiple reasons. One is simply that strong short position that will eventually need to be covered or reversed. And then the economic picture. Globally, we're certainly slowing down. Inflation's certainly moderating, and that's always an indication that the economy is slowing, that interest rates are going to head lower. And I think that's what you're likely going to see. Now, are we going to go from around the 3% level in the 10-year to back below 2? I wouldn't say that, but we're going to need to get down to probably the 2.4 level, 2.5, to get to a level where the trade is unwound. Okay, and the bond market is recognizing the economic realities that we're facing, which is not necessarily an economy that's negative, but is certainly slowing from a growth perspective. And I know Trump wants to talk about 4% GDP growth in the second quarter, and that certainly was true. Some of that you could argue was pull ahead because of tariffs and the fact that people were trading and doing business before tariffs were enacted, and that pushed up economic growth to some degree. How much? It's hard to know. But also some of it is just the factor of a tough comp, meaning in the third quarter, you're looking at the third quarter 2017, and that's a much tougher comp year over year from a growth perspective to deal with. And the odds are we're seeing a slowing global economy. So I hope that helps you understand where we're at, what type of market we're likely to see in the near future, and where interest rates are headed. Because where interest rates are headed are going to be very important to housing, the overall economy, and it tells you what is happening to the economy, because the bond market is certainly going to be an indication of where that is headed. 888-99 chart. 888. We're gonna go to a voicemail. Yeah, we're gonna go back to IDXX because I believe my stuff is up. My internet is finally working. It is finally working. Thank you very much. I just had to switch something real quick. We're back. So okay, IDXX, like the caller had. This is my wants to finally load. I know he said it was in the, it sounded like it was a very complex company. Develops products, provides services primarily for veterinary, bioresearch, dairy, and water testing markets. Certainly diverse. Revenue over the last 2 years has grown in the 10 to 15% range quarter year over year. Earnings up about 20% year over year. And certainly a growth name, like he said. $21 billion market cap. Let me look a little deeper at these numbers and give you a sense of how over or undervalued it is. They don't have a lot of debt. I love that about this company. Their operating earnings yield is only about 2%. That's pretty low. Enterprise value to EBITDA is at 40. That's also high, which means it's not good. So it's expensive on that in that sense. Let me look at the chart real quick and try to get a sense of is momentum petering out? Is this something that you need to worry about? And I'm just from a price perspective, I would say yes. I think it looks like it's a little tired. You had big volume today or yesterday, and that was on the downside. I don't like that. I would stay away from it. I would stay away from IDXX. I think it's just too expensive. It's certainly a good company, very profitable. Return on assets 19%. Return on invested capital 27%. It's very strong. I like all that, all those numbers. But it's also very, very expensive. So keep on your watch list, but I would stay away from it right now. I'm Justin Klein, and I thank you for making time to join us here each weekday from 4 until 5 p.m. Pacific time. It's streamed live through investtalk.com and broadcast live in the Bay Area on AM 1220 KDOW. Now, InvestTalk, just what do we do here? What do we try to accomplish for you? Well, the idea is that the more you listen, the more you will learn about the investing knowledge you need to know and related financial questions. Our theme at InvestTalk is above average investing for the average investor, and that translates to you don't need to be an expert. Steve and I are the experts. So all you need to do is bring this hour to your inquisitive mind and inquisitive mindset and the willingness to call with your questions and be open-minded, not stuck to a particular idea. Absorb information. Take the pros and the cons of whatever you hear, not just from us, but everybody. And give us a call. Get your questions answered on an anytime listener line at 888-99-CHART.
If you live anywhere in Northern California and you missed your opportunity in July to sit down with Steve Peasley for a one-on-one portfolio review, there will be a second chance. Yes, Steve is returning to San Jose very soon on August 29th, and he can help you fine-tune your portfolio so that it produces improved results. Appointments are free of charge, but they're almost filled. Don't delay. Register now through investtalk.com. And now, Justin's here. The phone lines are open, so get your questions in. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, this is Alias out of Corpus Christi, Texas. I have a question about dividend payouts. I've often heard you say that every time a stock will pay out a dividend, the price of the stock goes down to whatever the amount they paid. Say they paid 50 cents per share, then the stock drops 50 cents. My also understanding is that they only pay dividends if they can afford to pay a dividend if they had earnings per share. What happens whenever a company cannot afford to pay the dividend? What happens to it? Where does it go? Are they still obligated to pay it? And if they do pay it, the stock will still drop. And if they don't pay it, what happens to the stock? Thank you. I'm sorry. I hope you understood that. I love the show, and I'll listen on the podcast. Thanks, guys.
I definitely understood your question, and it is a good question. And your first part is correct about the dividend price dropping, the amount of the dividend, the day of X, the X dividend date, etc. And one thing, and so the latter part is a deeper dive question, and that is really what you first need to understand is that dividends are optional. They're not like a bond payment, right? Whereas a company has corporate debt, they need to pay interest on it. And if they don't, they default and they have to go through some sort of bankruptcy process. A dividend can be increased, but it can also be decreased just as easily. And many times you will see a stock drop before the dividend gets decreased or eliminated sometimes. And they eliminate it usually when they run into financial stress and not able to do it. Okay, so that happens many times. And that's why we talk about when you see a stock that has a 18% dividend. Well, that's great. And I'll give you one example as a caller from last week about High Crush Limited Partnerships. And I got a few emails about this. HCLP is a 24.5% dividend yield. And that sounds fantastic. Right? You getting a 25% payout every year. Well, if you look at the history, they have cut and increased their dividend consistently. This isn't like Procter & Gamble where you're going to get the same whatever 55 cents a share every quarter. It's not how it works. In fact, Hi-Crush Partners cut their dividend completely, I believe, in 2016, just a couple years ago. Now things are better for the business. They increase it. But guess what? If the business goes down again, oil prices go down because that's the business that they're in, they're going to cut their dividend. That is not what we call a safe dividend. That is a high-risk dividend, very high-risk dividend. So understand that. Dividends are optional. The board of directors, the management can cut dividends really at any time they want. So be aware of that. And if they can't afford it, they simply don't pay it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's talk a little bit about this recent suggestion by not only Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan, but also Warren Buffett. And they call for companies to move away from quarterly earnings per share guidance because they think that this leads to unhealthy focus on short-term profits at the expense of a long-term strategy, growth, and sustainability. And President Trump has gone a step further and asked financial regulators to consider allowing public companies to share information with investors less often. So he directed the SEC to study this idea. And I have to tell you, I think this is a horrible idea. Why? Because it would make those semi-annual reports even more important. Right? If something happens less often, you focus on that big thing like it's everything, right? Think of a wedding. You have a wedding, I say, once a lifetime, hopefully. And it's this huge ordeal. Well, imagine if you had, quote-unquote, a wedding every year. How much of an ordeal would it really be? How much of an event would it be? Would you really put that much focus on it? Would people fly in from all over the country, all over the world, to go to that annual wedding? No. So I think this is a bad idea, and it would create less transparency. Think about the financial shenanigans that companies throughout history, like an Enron, a WorldCom, did on a quarterly basis, and what, you know, Tesla is doing today, and instead allowing them to go six full months without updating the public and shareholders on how their business is doing. It's counterproductive. In fact, technology these days is deploying or allowing business intelligence software and big data software to really automate a lot of these reports, right? Think about sales software and payroll software and all of this software that is allowing data to flow easily throughout an organization internally. Why not make that all external to some degree and report monthly or weekly or even daily? That's the direction we should go. GE is a good example. They obsessed over beating expectations by a penny every quarter, and that resulted in accounting fraud, executive turmoil, and really a bad stock because they were managing. You think that having it semi-annually would make people less focused on those semi-annual reports? No. People would be more focused. They'd have bigger impact. So there'd be more incentive to do financial shenanigans. So I think this is a bad idea. I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART.
On the next InvestTalk, four things to know about backdoor Roth IRA conversions. Congress has allowed people with high incomes a way to fund a Roth IRA. Steve will break down the story tomorrow. But now, Justin's here, and he's ready and waiting for your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, guys. This is Nick calling from Richmond, Virginia. My question is regarding Align Technology, ALGN. They had a positive earnings report for Q2 where they beat revenues and profits estimates, and they were down almost 5% following that report. So I was just curious if you could give some insight as to what may have caused that, and I will be listening on the podcast. Thanks so much.
I'll give you a very simple explanation, and this is what I talk about many times with growth companies. It's slowing growth. It's all about the trajectory of growth. And this is Align Technologies. And for everyone else out there, this is Invisalign. If you're watching on our YouTube live stream, you will see all the information I have up. The return on equity, 28%. The revenues are up 38% year over year, but that is a slower growth than the last couple quarters, which were over 40%. Earnings were up 53%, but that's also slower growth from the past three quarters. No dividend, very little debt, good cash flow, but extremely expensive. A $28 billion market cap on a company that does less than $1 billion a year in revenue. Now that revenue is growing dramatically, and their cash flow is strong, but it's not nearly as strong as it should be, or to in relation to the market cap of the company. Let's say that. The enterprise value to EBITDA is 59. That's extremely high. It should be about a third of that number. I'll take a 20 because of the growth, and I like the business. What I wonder is, do they have a lot of competitors? I know they have a proprietary system, but do they have something similar out there that's not Invisalign? So I love companies like this that have a strong economic moat, that have proprietary technology. But I'm only going to pay so much, and I think you're way late to the game. This needs to be closer to 200 as opposed to 350 at the close today. At 200, I love it, but I don't think at this level, at 59 times enterprise value to EBITDA, I'm going to pay up for that number. Let's go to Nick in Hayward. He wants to talk about EXEL.
Yes, sir. Hi, Justin. Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate it. I bought some at about $20, and it's down to $17.69 as I see. Is that buy, sell, or hold here, in your opinion, please?
Ooh, I would sell. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the biotech space right now, and this is definitely in a solid downtrend. Revenues are, once again, slowing growth, which I don't like that. I don't like the technical picture at all on this name. It was consolidating bearishly, and it just started to really break down. Down 7.8% today. I would cut your losses and move on, mainly because of that slowing growth, and I just don't like the space overall.
Okay. Do you have a time for one more?
Sure.
N-E.
Noble. So this is one of the largest oil company. That's what I thought. Yeah, companies out there. Actually, it's not that big. $1.4 billion market cap. So revenues on consistent decline, losing money. This is a Swiss company, offshore contract drilling services. I don't like that because of fracking has kind of replaced the marginal producer of oil, which used to be kind of offshore drillers because of the lower cost. But I don't like it. I don't like this that fact. So it has a lot of long-term headwinds. It's had a decent rally here, but they have a lot of debt. And I if oil goes back down, I think fracking is going to take that marginal place as it has in the industry, and I would not be owning Noble either.
Okay. Thank you, Justin. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for the call, Nick. Glad you made it. Now, I think that's it for the Monday. Another InvestTalk radio show destined to be posted within an hour to our podcast player library at investtalk.com. Thank you for listening, and please come back tomorrow. I'm Justin Klein. Good night.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is President and Justin Klein Chief Executive Officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.